sports meets life with an unbiased perspective. This is your wake-up call with Dan Tortora.
Welcome here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on wakeupcalldt.com, your one-stop sports shop. Anything you need, anytime you need it when it comes to the world of sports, originality, integrity, and a little bit of comedy, all things that I stand for, and also honesty. My opinions are really my opinions. I don't take them just to see what you'll say. I don't take them to try and piss you off or rile anything up. My opinions are the way that I feel. I still think Tim Tebow has a place in the NFL. That's my belief. That might stir somebody up. That might get somebody crazy. That might make somebody wake up in the middle of the night and say, Dan is a psycho. There's something. What is wrong with this guy? But that's okay. That's okay. You could call into the show. 315-503-1FAN. 315-503-1326 is the number to call. And that number will get you in contact with me. And I only ask two things if you give your opinion. Whether you're calling the fan line, getting to me on Facebook.com/WakeUpCallDT, or if you're getting me on Twitter at CallDT, that's CallDT. I always appreciate and welcome all of your opinions. I only ask two things. Justify your opinion. Don't send me a message saying Tim Tebow sucks because I said so. Tell me why. If you don't like Tim Tebow, if you don't think he belongs in the NFL, then tell me why. And that's just an example. Anything that's on your mind, you just justify your opinion and do it respectfully. I'm a big person on respect. I will respect you. I ask for that in return. I understand people get heated. We all have teams that we love and players that we love. And on the other side of it, the teams that you are not a big fan of and the players that you don't really like. But I am a fan of impartiality. I think that is a cardinal sin as a broadcaster to be partial in any way, shape, or form when it comes to a team or a player to have partiality. I don't think that that's right. You know, I might like Tim Tebow as a person. I've met him. He was nice to me. We got to talk for a little bit, and I appreciated that time. It was memorable that I had the opportunity to speak with him. Good conversation. But if I was basing, hey, he should play football because he's a really nice guy, that doesn't fit. So I separate those two. Did I like my conversation with Tim Tebow? Yes. Do I think he should play football? Yes, but for other reasons. The guy finds a way to win. He's a successful person. No matter what, whether you think he's a traditional quarterback or a running back or an H-back, whatever you want to call him, he finds a way to win on the college level and on the pro level. And there's guys that people have gotten behind and believed in more than Tim Tebow that haven't found ways to win on the professional level for football. Look at a guy like Jamarcus Russell, the number one pick out of LSU, really well in college, and the mentality was, this guy's going to blow it up. He's going to make it happen. You put him next to Tim Tebow, look at his arm strength, look at his capability, and he goes and makes more money losing games than he does winning games with the Oakland Raiders. You look at how many games he lost, multiply that by the money he was making per game, and the man, I believe I figured it out to be that he made something like 40-some-odd million dollars for his cumulative losses. Think about that. If you did terrible at your job, absolutely awful, let's say you were a teacher, right? And every student in your class failed every semester. Every single student. Everybody failed. They couldn't get it. You couldn't get one student to get a 60. And then they said, you know what? We're going to sign you for another 3 years. We like the way you teach. That's kind of how it went with Jamarcus Russell. Now, with Tim Tebow, it was the opposite. It was, hey, you got to the playoffs. How many teams get there? 12. 12 out of 32 teams get there. 20 of them are sitting at home. And you look at Tim Tebow and what he did. Taking a team with Kyle Orton running it that had one win and helping that team. And it wasn't just him. It was the Denver Broncos defense. It was Matt Prater as their kicker. It was the young talent that they have that's still there, and a guy like Demaryius Thomas. So it all was there together. But Tim Tebow was that missing link that season because Kyle Orton wasn't it. If the defense and the kicker and the young talent on offense was enough, then they would have made it. They would have made it with Kyle Orton, but it wasn't. So you have to give credit to the fact that Tim Tebow has had a place in the success of the NFL that other people have not. And that's why I think he should be playing in the NFL, because the man finds a way to win. At the end of the day, whatever team you rep out of 32 NFL teams, whatever jersey you put on, whatever hat you wear to work, that team, if they won more games with a certain guy, then you're going to be happy about that. Now, if it's a guy that's involved with something like dogfighting, like a Michael Vick, I would never want him on my team. I just wouldn't. I believe in second chances in life, absolutely. I would not want that person leading my team. That, to me, is a difference. I wouldn't be a fan of that. So, you know, you look at the character, but if the character is good and the guy goes out there and he competes, and in female sports, in the same respect, the woman goes out there and she competes, then you leave them out there. You play them. You let them have their game. You let them have their time to shine. And I think that that's been taken away from a guy like Tim Tebow, so that's why I have such a strong opinion. And that is my long-winded way of telling you that I have opinions, you have opinions, and we could share them together anytime you want. Today on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on WakeUpCallDT.com, in this episode, you and I are going to be discussing a few things. The annoying moment of the week, proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt. May have a couple for you in that one. It's going back and forth, so I'll hold on to a couple of those topics. There might be two scoops of the annoying moment of the week, proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt. So we'll check into that very, very soon. I will be talking to you about the Syracuse-Florida State matchup. Syracuse playing who I believe to potentially be the best team in the country when it comes to the fact that they're still blowing teams out at this point in the season in Florida State, where Alabama is neck and neck with teams, was 17-17 third quarter with LSU before they blew up in the fourth quarter. So I think that, you know, it could be potentially safe to say that Florida State might be that better team, even though they're regarded as the second best team. I'm telling you, redshirt freshman playing the way that Jameis Winston does, that is a steal and then some. And that is an understatement. You go from Christian Ponder to E.J. Manuel to Jameis Winston, and Jameis Winston seems like he'd be even potentially better and help lead the team to a national championship. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Syracuse's side of it. I know nobody's believing in Syracuse to win the game. I personally do not have Syracuse winning the game, but I'll tell you the positives that Syracuse brings into the game, because I'm not a fan of just looking at something and saying, whatever, it's done, move on with life. You know, I don't think if you were involved in something that you would want somebody to count you out completely and not mention you. Or maybe you would. Maybe it's fuel to the fire. Maybe Syracuse loves the fact that everybody's talking about Florida State. They've responded that way before when it comes to a team like West Virginia. So it'll be interesting. And the funny thing was, after Syracuse beat West Virginia for the third time in three seasons in the Pinstripe Bowl in 2012, there were certain outlets of the media that did not talk once about Prince Tyson Gully, who had multiple touchdowns, did not talk about the overall play of Syracuse, did not really mention Ryan Nassib, but spent a lot of time on the draft stock of Geno Smith for West Virginia. Interesting how that shakes out when West Virginia was obviously outplayed by Syracuse. So I think that's something that I think Syracuse was completely disrespected going in and disrespected coming out, which is something I don't agree with. So we'll take a look at both teams. And as I said, I have Florida State winning this game, but fair is fair, and what is right. And to me, you look at both sides and what both teams can offer. I'm going to make a prediction at the end of it all. You know, I'm going to do that. That's what I do. I make predictions on certain games, and that prediction is a prediction. But there are positives, and there are other points of potential, not negativity, but growth that a team can have that you have to look at. So we'll take a look at that, despite the fact that there is a lopsided community, I should say, with Florida State. Still have to take a look at both of these teams, Syracuse, and this is something that I've said off the air, and it needs to be said on the air. I don't think that there is a person, after Syracuse beat Maryland, and they go 3-2 in the ACC, so you have a winning record in the ACC coming from the Big East. And no disrespect to the Big East, But the talent of the Big East at the time that Syracuse left is nowhere near what you see from the ACC. It just wasn't. When you're going up against teams like UConn under Paul Pasqualoni, and you look at a team like Rutgers who has their positive moments, but they struggle. When you see those teams, it was really Louisville. I mean, when West Virginia left, it was really Louisville. There was really nobody else. I mean, South Florida, they had their issues. There wasn't a lot of competitiveness. Temple, when they came in. So Syracuse leaves a conference like that. You go to the ACC, and in your division alone, don't even look at the rest of the ACC. Just Syracuse's division has Maryland, has Clemson, and has Florida State. Difficult teams. Very difficult teams. And Syracuse has to go up against those teams every single season outside of Maryland after this season because they're going to the Big Ten. But Syracuse will play them in their non-conference schedule, which keeps things interesting and keeps that old rivalry that was alive before the Big East even, keeps that rivalry alive, which I think is important. Somebody like Floyd Little, who's been on the show numerous times here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com, Floyd and I have discussed that, and Floyd brought up the fact that some people forget about that Maryland rivalry, and Syracuse getting a win against Maryland. First time they played them since 1997 and pulling a victory from the Maryland Terrapins. A very important victory. I had said before the season started that Maryland, to me, was the equator line of the ACC. They were that middle road. They're that team that if you lose to them, you're in the bottom half. If you beat them, you're in the top half. Now, when I say top half, I'm not saying top two, three. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying Clemson, Florida State, okay, because they're obviously at the top. Let's be honest with each other. They're up there. So I'm not saying Syracuse beats Maryland. They're the best team in the ACC. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is if you look at the ACC teams, which with Maryland altogether, you look at this grouping of the teams, I see Maryland in the middle. So if you beat Maryland, you're above the equator. And I said, if Syracuse does that, then that's a really important thing to say. It's a very important first impression, a positive first impression, to come into the ACC, beat Maryland, and say, guess what? We're better than the norm. We're better than the equator line. We're better than that 500 even keel. And it kind of made sense because when Syracuse went in to play Maryland, that's where they were at. They were at that record of 5-3, now being 5-4 after losing to Syracuse. So it made sense that that's how it was. And Syracuse was at 4-4, and then they beat Maryland, they go to 5-4. So here's my thing to Syracuse fans and what I was saying before, why no Syracuse fan after the Maryland win can really complain. And that's the fact that Syracuse is above 500 after 9 games with 12 games in a season, above 500. Okay, that's number one. Number two, Syracuse has won 3 of 5 games after that Maryland game. 3 of 5 games in the ACC they won. So that to me is huge. Above 500 record after their first 5 games in the ACC. Above 500 record after starting 0-2 against Penn State and then Northwestern. So not just the wins against Wagner and Tulane, but wins against NC State on the road, Maryland on the road, and Wake Forest at home, which Syracuse has owned Wake Forest. They've beaten them a couple times in recent history. In the 2 times they've seen them in the last 3 years, they've defeated them. So very important. Syracuse, to me, I think when you look at that record, you have a new head coach. Granted, he was on the staff. He's a defensive coordinator, but he wasn't the guy leading it. So now he's the guy leading it, that learning curve of being a defensive coordinator, being up in the booth. Now you're down on the field. You're in charge of everybody. You're watching everybody. You have a quarterback race going into the season. Not only that, but you start with a quarterback, change your mind, go to a different quarterback, starting with Drew Allen, then going to Terrell Hunt, all amidst the fact that on the defensive side of the ball, Syracuse lost someone in every single piece of that, at the front line, that defensive line. No more Brandon Sharp, no Deion Goggins, no Siriki Diabate at middle linebacker, and no Shamarco Thomas at strong safety. So Syracuse having a lot of things that could potentially be that adversity, that new coach trying to find the right quarterback, going back and forth as the season progressed early on, and then losing not only veterans, but veterans that established some leadership. Syracuse moving forward from that, having the record that they've had, is something very special that the team has been able to go to so far. So to me, I don't think any Syracuse fan can really complain about the fact that the team, through nine games, has a winning record and a winning record in the ACC with all the talent that they're going up against. So I think it's very respectable, I would say, at the very least, of what Scott Schaefer is putting forward. So that's something to look at going in, and we'll obviously talk about that Florida State-Syracuse game coming up and some interesting things going on behind the scenes with Florida State's quarterback, Jameis Winston. So we'll definitely get into that. We'll talk about Syracuse basketball and how they perform so far, and you will hear from many of the players from the Syracuse Orange men's basketball squad, including shooting guard Trevor Cooney, also true freshman newcomers forwards Tyler Roberson and B.J. Johnson, along with point guard Michael Benajay, and the veteran and lone senior that's out there gaining substantial minutes, and that being a Mr. C.J. Fair at forward in the front court for the Orange. So you'll hear from all of them coming up, and of course, rounding out the show with Tweet of the Week, where I pick my favorite tweet from all of you that follow me on Twitter. I thank the over 450 of you that are with me on Twitter. Cannot thank you enough for that. You could follow me at CallDT. That's C-A-L-L-D-T. So make sure you get on that, follow me, and you could be the winner of Tweet of the Week coming up in the future. We'll find out who the winner is toward the end of the show here only on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on WakeUpCallDT.com. Take a step aside right now to hear from those partners with Dan Satora Broadcast Media that you need to get out to and enjoy their services. If you haven't been to Pole Position Raceway, Carvel DeWitt, or Salt City Billiards, definitely need to get out there. If you frequent those places, continue to go. You'll find out why coming up right now on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, our partners right here for Dan Satora Broadcast Media. Come out to Pole Position Raceway, the premier indoor electric karting experience. Open 7 days a week, their quarter-mile-long European-style track, located on the third floor of Destiny USA in Syracuse, New York, is home to the fastest electric karts in North America, with speeds up to 45 miles per hour. Arrive and drive any day, Monday through Sunday. Pole Position Raceway is also available for group events. From kids' birthday parties to corporate events, they will provide an authentic, exhilarating, and safe racing experience your guests will never forget. For more information, visit PolePositionRaceway.com or stop in today on the third floor of Destiny USA in Syracuse, New York. Pole Position Raceway, built by racers for racers.
Carvel DeWitt, it's what happy tastes like. Do you know why? Because we make ice cream. Creamy, rich, flavorful ice cream. Not yogurt or iced milk like some of our competitors. Ice cream. Fresh, by hand, daily. For the calorie conscious, we have something new for you. Our new Carvelite. Same great flavor, creaminess, and texture of our regular ice cream with only 35 calories an ounce. So whether you want an ice cream cake, flying saucer, dasher, carvelage, hard or soft ice cream, we will satisfy your craving with our fresh, handmade regular or new Carvelite ice cream. Carvel DeWitt. It's what happy tastes like.
Rack 'em up for the perfect sport to play in any weather. Salt City Billiards in North Syracuse, located on Brewerton Road, minutes from Interstate 81, has been the home of a dozen pool tables featuring some of your best shots and memories for years. Cue it up at Salt City Billiards any day of the week. And make sure you're there with me, Dan Satora, for on-call nights every single Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m., where you'll rack them up as many times as you want with 2 hours of pool play for just $5. Also, Bud and Bud Light specials, and we can talk about sports. That's On Call Nights, Thursdays, 7 to 9 p.m. at Salt City Billiards, where you can grab a drink, get something to eat, and dive into the pool no matter what the season. Salt City Billiards, minutes from Interstate 81 on Brewerton Road in North Syracuse.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop sports shop. And up first, the annoying moment of the week, proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt on 4322 East Genesee Street in DeWitt, New York, minutes from Syracuse University's campus and right at the end of Erie Boulevard across from Tops in that plaza. Can't miss it. Carvel DeWitt, your place to go when it comes to any type of ice cream, whether it be a shake, that original sundae that you want with hot fudge or with caramel, or you want a Carvelanche and you want to mix in some Reese's peanut butter cups, some M&Ms, or you're thinking about getting an ice cream cake. There is no other place to get an ice cream cake. It's synonymous with Carvel. When I think of ice cream cake, I think of Carvel. That's what I want to see on the box. I know the quality. I trust it. There's nothing like it. There may be some imitations, but Carvel has provided my family with Carvel ice cream cakes for so many different events throughout my life, throughout the time that I've been here, seeing that Carvel cake in the pictures of those that I love, my grandfathers who have passed on, my Grandma Miller who's passed on. For every special moment that I see that Carvel cake and I see them, I think back on those moments and I think, you know, my pop, I remember going to Carvel and getting my mom's dad, my papa on my mom's side, I remember getting him a Carvel cake and my mom letting me pick it out. I remember every time it was somebody's birthday, we went over there and got it. I remember that even though my grandmother on my dad's side was in the nursing home for the last few years of her life and had Alzheimer's, that he would pick up a Carvel ice cream cake with my mom. We would bring it over to her. She might not say a word. She may be confused. She may be quiet that day. But when you put that piece of cake in front of her and you asked her, "Do you want this?" she would nod. And then I remember one of the times that we brought an ice cream cake over there from Carvel. All she did, she was completely silent. And all she must have done within 2 minutes is just eat this cake. And I remember she had the piece of cake from Carvel. And then I remember talking and then just looking at her and saying, "Grandma, where'd the cake go?" Because it's just, it's something that they always loved. You know, and that means so much to me to see that my grandmother, even with losing her memory and forgetting certain things, that she still had those things that she liked. And something as simple as a Carvel ice cream cake was something that she enjoyed. That was something that she still ate and still enjoyed being in that moment. And that, to me, is something that when she was in her own house and she was cooking and you bring her over a Carvel ice cream cake and she's sitting there having a piece of the cake and talking with you, and then later on in her life this disease happens, you know, and unfortunately, and I want to find a cure to Alzheimer's, so everyone dealing with this, please know you're in my prayers, you're in my thoughts, to everyone that has it and to everyone that has it in their family, and to all the loved ones of those affected, you are in my prayers and my hopes every single day. And to see my grandmother just be that person that was always doing different things for people and getting everything ready and putting so much on herself, and you put the cake in front of her and she loved it, and then later on in her life, even with Alzheimer's, even being in a nursing home, she loved the cake. So that car, you know, I can thank Carvel for all that they've done, and I thank Carvel DeWitt with Jay Cartini and his team for all they've done for me to have the Wake Up Call Sunday, which is truly an honor. And if you knew my grandparents, you would know that, if you know, telling them, "Hey, I have my own Sunday at Carvel," is something that would definitely mean the world. So they drive over in a heartbeat to get that, and I'm blessed to have a grandmother that is going to be 97 years old who needs to get over there because she likes her sweet. So I'm going to have to take her over there to try that Wake Up Call Sunday. And you can go over there and try it Head over there any day of the week, Monday through Sunday. They're open until 9 p.m. every single day. And get that wake-up call Sunday. Soft serve chocolate, vanilla, or a twist, whichever you want. Topped off with cookie dough pieces, caramel swirl, whipped cream, and a cherry. And if you're counting the calories and you're saying, Dan, that sounds phenomenal, but guess what? I'm counting some calories here. I'm trying to be good here in the holiday season. Listen, I understand. I'm right there with you. Try the Carvel Light. Less calories per ounce, and you don't get rid of the flavor. I can't tell the difference, honestly, between regular and having Carvel Light. So go out there, and whether you want to get the Carvel Light or you want the original, whatever it may be, the Wake Up Call Sunday, phenomenal, however you have it. Thank you for everyone that's gone out and had the Wake Up Call Sunday. I truly appreciate it. The only place you can get it is Carvel DeWitt, 4322 East Genesee Street. It's an honor to have it there. It's an honor to work with Jay Cartini, and it's an honor to be connected to something that has meant so much to my family over the years and meant so much to many of the families in Central New York, with Carvel DeWitt being the longest standing franchise in the entire country. So if you haven't been there before, stop over there and see all the beautiful things about it and start some memories with your family. And if you have those memories, keep them going. Trust me, they mean a lot when you look back on those pictures as you grow up. So, Carvel DeWitt, the annoying moment of the week. This is how we're starting things off here. Proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt. Once again, 4322 East Genesee Street in DeWitt, New York. But you know that I cannot do the annoying moment of the week unless I grace your ears with this sound. The annoying moment of the week. Proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt and Two Scoops of the annoying moment of the week this week. First being the undefeated Kansas City Chiefs of the NFL, only undefeated team of 32 NFL franchises, had some negative news that happened off the field. And I might actually have to do three scoops now that I think about it, because there's another wide receiver that fits the bill here. Wide receiver Dwayne Bowe, first off, we'll talk about him, of the Kansas City Chiefs, was arrested in Riverside, Missouri after being charged with possession of a controlled substance, which police stated was marijuana, and for speeding. Chiefs head coach Andy Reid had this to say, quote, "It's a legal matter. That's the way we'll handle it and let it run the course there. Dwayne's been a team player since I've been here. He doesn't want to bring any problems." End quote. Dwayne Bowe released a statement saying, quote, "I apologize to the Hunt family, Coach Reed, my teammates, and Chiefs fans for the distraction I have caused the team this week. Due to the nature of the pending matter, I am unable to make any further comment on the situation." End quote. Then the attorney for Bowe, Kevin Regan, had this to say, quote, "My investigation reveals that Dwayne Bowe is unequivocally 100% innocent in this matter. We look forward to clearing his good name at our earliest opportunity." End quote. Bowe is in the first year right now of a 5-year, $56 million contract he agreed to going into the current season. He was relatively quiet in recent history before having Alex Smith come in from the San Francisco 49ers to be his quarterback. And now, with having Alex Smith there, he's second among all Kansas City receivers with 33 catches and third among the Chiefs lot in receiving yards with 369 receiving yards. So obviously, Dwayne Bowe playing pretty well, getting himself out there, being a part of the offense, thanks to a guy like Alex Smith, who's really helping Dwayne Bowe to be Dwayne Bowe, but gets arrested, has these charges, and if he's convicted of the charges of possession of a controlled substance and speeding, then the NFL gets the first crack at handing out a punishment in coherence with the NFL's substance abuse policy. So that allows the league to be the first to do something about it. The Chiefs organization, get this, this is where the annoying moment of the week comes in for me. The Chiefs organization is barred from punishing Dwayne Bowe on their own until after the NFL makes their ruling as a league, according to the current collective bargaining agreement. So, now that you know the background on what's going on with Dwayne Bowe, from everything that allegedly went on when he got arrested in Riverside, Missouri, and all these charges and whatnot, Dwayne Bowe, as it sits right now, is going to be playing. not fined, not held out of competition, no suspension going on. Dwayne Bowe allowed to continue to go on with what's happening. Now, here's my thing. If he was found with possession of marijuana, I know some people don't believe this, but it's illegal. It is. I think that's the mentality is if I use it and I like it, then it's legal. That's how some people treat it. Well, it is still an illegal substance. Obviously, speeding, not the smartest thing to do. If he was under the influence of that, now he was just caught with it allegedly as a controlled substance, possession of it. So not anything about him being under the influence, which is a whole other story, which is something that would be terrible. And, you know, I mean, I have experienced getting hit by a drunk driver in my life. So anything that's going to impair, whether it's the fact that you're exhausted, you're under the influence of alcohol, under the influence of drugs, angry, whatever it may be, don't get behind the wheel of a car and put not only your life but the lives around you in danger, because those are usually the people that suffer if you're not completely there ready to go. So Dwayne Bowe, all this stuff happens, Riverside, Missouri. Here's my issue. Number one, that this is being done. Okay, you just sign a five-year, $56 million deal. If you break that down, and I know different years have different things and incentives, but let's just break it down and make it simple math. If you break down 5 years, $56 million, it's a little bit over $10 million a year. Some people won't see $10 million in a lifetime. So you're making $10 million plus a year. You're on a team that's 9-0. Why be an idiot at all? But look at where you're at. You have fame. You finally have a quarterback that's helping you get your game back on track. You're making millions and millions of dollars, and your team is the best team in the country. That, to me, is just, it's stupid. It's idiotic. It shouldn't happen if the team was 0-9, 0-16. It shouldn't happen if you're making $10 a year. But I'm just saying, Dwayne Bowe, with everything that he has been blessed with, to be in this type of situation, if it is true, if he did have possession of marijuana, why? Why? You're a role model to kids. You have fans watching you at all times. You're a millionaire. And you choose to do this with your life. The second thing that I don't agree with, now, and once again, if this all is allegedly true, Kevin Regan, the attorney for Dwayne Bowe, says, listen, unequivocally, 100%, he didn't do anything wrong. So we'll see where it's at from here. The other issue that I have here in the annoying moment of the week, proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt on 4322 East Genesee Street in DeWitt, New York. The other issue I have is the fact that the NFL has, under this new ruling, we get to make a decision if we want to punish your player. Now, each franchise is functioning as its own company under a bigger company. So there's that connection to the NFL, and I get that. But as a franchise, there's a lot of things that the day-to-day is all you. So to me, if I have a player on my team and I'm a general manager, I'm a head coach, I'm a position coach, I'm on that staff, I'm in the front office in some respect, I'm president, I'm the owner of the team, if my guy gets caught with an illegal substance, why do I have to wait for the NFL? Why do I have to wait to make that ruling? Dwayne Bowe would not be playing for me, because what does that teach somebody that did something wrong? If he was at fault, if he did do something wrong, if he did break the law, and he gets to play the next week, and you say, well, you know, it doesn't matter, because let's say 2 weeks from now, we're going to fine him $15,000, which is chump change to a guy making $10 million a year, or we are going to suspend him for a game. Well, he got to play immediately, still practicing with the team after the incident happened. It's almost as if it didn't happen or it wasn't wrong. I'm a fan of, if something's wrong, you nip it in the bud right when it happens. You do something about it immediately. So that is something I do not agree with. I think the Chiefs or any of the teams should be able to police their squad, and if there's something going on, yeah, you talk to the NFL about it, and if the NFL wants to do something on a bigger scale, understood. But the Chiefs should not have to worry about breaking a rule and saying, Dwayne Bowe, you need to sit down. Because in all honesty, if he did do something against the law, he should not be playing. I don't care what it was. If he broke the law, he should not be playing. That's just how it is. Now, if he's innocent, he should be playing. So I understand letting things run through and checking to see, you know, what evidence there is or what's going on to try and right the path. But like I said, Dwayne Bowe or anybody, if you're at fault for doing something against the law and you allow someone to keep playing, you're telling them it's okay. Even if you're not trying to, you are in some way. So I don't agree with that. The second scoop of the annoying moment of the week, proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt, home of the Wake Up Call Sunday. This second scoop is another wide receiver in the NFL, and that's Mr. Justin Blackmon. And here's what upsets me. I've had the opportunity to talk to Justin one-on-one, and this is a guy who really has helped out the Jaguars when he's out there. He's gotten consistently better. He hasn't been in the league long, but here's my issue. And again, you talk about policing your own team, policing your organization. Justin Blackmon had two DUIs before his rookie season. Now, he was holding out of training camp. He was holding out as a rookie to get a good contract, not going to training camp, not going to the OTAs, not going to any of this off-season stuff. Then he gets two DUIs, and then the Jaguars sign him. That, to me, is a red flag. If I got a guy who has never signed a contract with me, he's never played a game for me, and he's got a DUI, let alone two, guess what? I don't care if you're my draft pick. There should be some clause in the NFL that if a guy is breaking the law, not just the law of the NFL, he's breaking the law of the United States of America, you should have the right to say, you know what, I'm ripping up this contract or I'm not making one. Because Justin Blackmon comes back to the team. You look at this season for 2013-2014. He suspended the first five games for breaking the substance abuse policy. Justin Blackmon comes back, plays a little bit, out for the rest of the season because he broke the substance abuse policy. Two DUIs, two breaking of the NFL's substance abuse policy. So here is my issue. You have a guy who has more counts against him than he has seasons in the NFL, and he has to be asked not to be reinstated by the Jaguars, but he has to go to the NFL in 2014 and ask to be reinstated by the league. That's an issue. If I have a guy under contract that I'm giving money to, and the league could say, we don't want you, then where does that leave me? And where does it leave me when you're out the first five games, you're out the rest of the season, and you play in between for a couple games? Where does that leave me? It leaves me with nothing. And on the depth chart, you're my number one guy. So not only am I losing a receiver, I'm losing what potentially is my best receiver on a team that's rebuilding that needs all the help it can get in moving forward. So Justin Blackmon, if you came to my office and you asked me with all these counts against you for a job in the NFL, I would tell you, God bless you, God be with you, not on my team. Not on my team. I couldn't do it. Third scoop and final scoop for the annoying moment of the week, proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt, is, well, there's some good news here in the way that these teams perform, but the background to this. So let's get into what went on. The Champions Classic happened in Chicago, Illinois, which featured number one Kentucky against number two Michigan State and number four Duke against number five Kansas. And guests were there from all 30 NBA franchises, which included team general managers and scouts from the teams. Kentucky had freshman forward Julius Randle, who had a double-double, 27 points, 13 rebounds for the Wildcats, but the team fell to the Michigan State Spartans. Duke freshman forward Jabari Parker also had 27 points, and he had 9 rebounds to go with those points, and just like Julius Randle, his team lost. So despite almost 30 points, the team as a whole loses to the Kansas Jayhawks. For Kansas, freshman guard Andrew Wiggins, 22 points, 16 of which came in the latter half to help the Jayhawks defeat the Blue Devils. So, here's the thing. I know some people look at this and they're just saying, hey, guess what? Andrew Wiggins is the best. Then somebody else comes up and says, no, it's Jabari Parker. No, it's Julius Randle. Here's the thing. When you look at all of these teams that I mentioned, when you look at these players, Kentucky, Duke, and Kansas, Randall, Parker, and Wiggins, respectively, only one of them helped their team win the game. So that, to me, is important. Now, can the guy do everything? No. But when I look at these three players and I look at the Champions Classic, the only champion I really see in this is an Andrew Wiggins, because Wiggins, 16 of 22 points, 6 points in the first half, so he gets 16 in the latter half and helps his team come back and defeat the Duke Blue Devils. That says something to me, and Wiggins said this, which goes along with what I'm saying, quote, "The hype, it was big. I just tried to block it out. The names on jerseys don't say Parker and Wiggins. It says Kansas and Duke. At the end of the day, it's not one player that's going to win. It's one team." End quote. So the man that helped his team win the game is the one that's making that quote. Means a lot to me and what he had to say. Now, in the background, there's this talk, and I've heard it before, and I've had Joe Theismann on the show before, and people know him from the Washington Redskins and obviously a Super Bowl champion. Joe Theismann and I had the conversation about people tanking games, teams losing on purpose in the NFL in order to get a better pick. And he said, this is a quote from what he said. He said that the people that do that should, quote, be put on an island for their stupidity. Very, very passionate about this. Said that any team that has people on that team that are losing on purpose, those people should be put on an island by themselves for their stupidity. And I agree with them. Because in the background of everything going on with Wiggins, Jabari Parker, Julius Randle, going on in the Champions Classic, there's this background thought of, are NBA teams tanking games hoping that they'll have a better chance at the lottery to get one of these players, that they'll have more balls going into the lottery and a better opportunity, a higher percentage of getting one of those top picks? So that's going on in the background in some people's minds. Is this happening? Now, the Duke Blue Devils men's basketball head coach Mike Krzyzewski, known by many as Coach K, stated this, quote, "As an American, I wouldn't like to think that an American team would want to lose or create situations where you would want to lose. I can't even fathom. I can't go there. I can't believe that that would happen. Maybe I'm naive and I'm going to read a fairy tale after this. If this is happening, shame on whoever's doing it." End quote. So Mike Krzyzewski, similar to what Joe Theismann said to me when it came to the NFL, and if he would ever look at something and say that a team that's maybe having a losing record, not having a good season, should just tank it and try and get a good draft pick out of it. And obviously the NFL and the NBA are different. The NFL, if you are the worst team, you have the number one pick. You're guaranteed that. If you're in the NBA and you're the worst team, more often than not, you're not getting the number one pick, because the lottery is a lottery. You have more chances, you have a higher probability, but it doesn't always come out that way that you're the team that's going to get that number one pick. So I look at it and I say, if an NBA team is doing it, you still have to go through a lottery, so it's kind of stupid for you to blow a season because you have no guarantee. In the NFL, there's a guarantee somewhat, but above all things, and this is why it's the third scoop of the annoying moment of the week for this very high cone that I'm making from Carvel DeWitt, is the fact that the overwhelming issue with this is the notion of tanking games, of telling professionals to essentially cheat. And when you think of cheat, you know, when somebody's cheating on a test, you're trying to get a better grade. If you're cheating in a game, you're trying to win the game. Well, cheating can also go the opposite direction. Teams can be cheating, so to speak, by not playing to their full potential, and so you're losing on purpose in order to help yourself out in the future. I think everything shakes out in the wash. I really do. I think if a team is losing on purpose in order to get a good draft pick, then that'll come back and bite them in the butt. I believe that. I believe in karma. You shouldn't spit into the wind, that type of thing. I believe that because I've seen it firsthand, and I know it myself. If I spit into the wind, God makes sure it hits me immediately. It happens just right like that. So to me, it's wrong in general. If your team is bad and you say, Dan, listen, seriously, we've won 10 games that we've played. There's 82 games in an NBA season. We got 5 games to go. Who the heck cares if we win them? We got 10. Who cares if it's 15? Let's just lose these last 5 and guarantee that we'll have the biggest probability of getting the number one pick because we know the person that we want. You know, it's a lot of what-ifs. In the NBA, it's a lot of what-ifs. So I think you're, even if you lose on purpose, you're still fighting with a lottery, literally, in this case. But I think even in other cases, you shouldn't do it. I don't think you should ever train anyone to lose on purpose, to not play to their full potential. It's lying. I mean, you think about it. For all you fans listening, I mean, everyone listening to the show right now, you're a fan of sports in some respect. So, or you just love the sound of my voice, which, thank you. I appreciate that. I'll sing you a bedtime story. But for those people that follow sports, all of you listening in, you would get cheated. Think about that. You go to see your team that you love. You pay good money for your tickets. You pay to park. You pay for the food that's there. When all said and done, you could easily spend over $100 at a game just for one person. And you find out at the end of the season that your team was losing on purpose to get a good pick. Now, some of you would say, well, you know what, Dan? That's great for our future. You know, I don't care the fact that they tanked games because look who we got. We got Andrew Wiggins. We're going to be amazing. There's no guarantee. There's no guarantee that someone that is predicted to be the best or highly recruited, highly touted, highly regarded, whatever that may be, there's no... Greg Oden, perfect example. Greg Oden, Ohio State, he's the guy. Kevin Durant was the second pick out of Texas, the second pick in the draft. Greg Oden was the first pick. Where's Greg Oden? Where's Kevin Durant? So you fight and you fight and you fight and you fight. Think about if teams actually tank games. Think about if that happened. If Portland, if you were a Portland fan and they tank games and you said, Dan, I don't care. We're going to get the number one pick. Then fast forward to now, look back to that number one pick with Greg Oden. Now you're not happy. Now you could say to me, well, who cares? You know, what if you're an Oklahoma City Thunder fan? They used to be the Seattle Seahawks, or Seattle Seahawks, yeah, of course. Used to be the Seattle Supersonics. See, I'm intertwining the NFL and the NBA too much. Used to be the Seattle Supersonics, and the team was awful in their last year in Seattle. So you say to me, you know what, Dan? What if they did? What if they tanked it? So what if Oklahoma City tanked it so they could go in there? They didn't get Greg Oden, but they get Kevin Durant. And look where my team is now. But what morals and values are you teaching someone? Would you teach your kid to cheat to win or to cheat to lose? Would you cheat to win or cheat to lose? If you answer this question yes, that concerns me because there are some people that are going to say, yeah, you know what? Winning at all costs, even in losing, I'm winning because I'm getting a top draft pick. I don't agree with it. I know people have a different set of opinions. I know some people that are going to be on the total opposite side of me and saying if it helps the team in the long run, who cares, Dan? By all means necessary. But by all means necessary usually winds up being something very, very terrible. Very, very, very far. When you start saying by all means necessary, it's a little bit and a little bit more and a little bit more until you don't even look human anymore. To me, if I'm on a team, I play the game to win. Okay? I'll take a page from Herm Edwards and what he said as the Jets head coach. You play to win the game. You do. If you're not playing to win games, you shouldn't be playing. Because there are so many people that were told no that would love to have your job. So if your job is to lose on purpose, you're spitting in the face of everybody that's working hard to try and get to where you are. So eventually, the money, it goes away. You can't take it with you. And the memories of not being moral, not being values-driven, and just doing whatever it took to get there doesn't always work out. It may work out initially, but in the long run, I'm a true believer that if you try to cheat the system, if you try to go behind the scenes and do what's wrong, things eventually right themselves. and that's something I would never want to be on the other side of. When that system reboots and it realizes that I was the glitch, guess what? Not a good day for me. Not something that I would say I would recommend for a team. Here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop sports shop. That is the Annoying Moment of the Week, proudly brought to you by Carvel DeWitt on 4322 East Genesee Street in DeWitt, New York, in the plaza across from Tops. Open Monday through Sunday until 9 p.m., and don't let the cold weather fool you. Doesn't matter if it snows. Doesn't matter if it gets cold outside. Put on a jacket and head over to Carvel DeWitt. You went over there in shorts and a t-shirt. Now go over there in a jacket, because guess what? The ice cream cake, the sundaes, including the wake-up call sundae, the Carvel Anches, the Flying Saucers, their flavor never changes with the weather. They stay consistent. So get over there and enjoy that consistency that you've had in Central New York for over 60 years and longer than any other Carvel franchise in America. Get out and enjoy the product that Jay Cartini and his staff are putting out, fresh handmade cakes daily at Carvel DeWitt. Take a quick step aside here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on WakeUpCallDT.com, and then we're right back at it. Coming up in just a little bit, one-on-one exclusive with Tim Dowse, the defensive line coach, assistant head coach, and special teams coach for the Syracuse Orange, as well as your Syracuse Orange men's basketball team, joining me with more exclusives only here where sports meets life. Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. Come out to Pole Position Raceway, the premier indoor electric karting experience. Open 7 days a week, their quarter-mile-long European-style track, located on the third floor of Destiny USA in Syracuse, New York, is home to the fastest electric karts in North America, with speeds up to 45 miles per hour. Arrive and drive any day, Monday through Sunday. Pole Position Raceway is also available for group events. From kids' birthday parties to corporate events, they will provide an authentic, exhilarating, and safe racing experience your guests will never forget. For more information, visit polepositionraceway.com or stop in today on the third floor of Destiny USA in Syracuse, New York. Pole Position Raceway, built by racers for racers.
Carvel DeWitt, it's what happy tastes like. Do you know why? Because we make ice cream. Creamy, rich, flavorful ice cream. Not yogurt or iced milk like some of our competitors. Ice cream. Fresh, by hand, daily. For the calorie conscious, we have something new for you. Our new Carvelite. Same great flavor, creaminess, and texture of our regular ice cream with only 35 calories an ounce. So whether you want an ice cream cake, flying saucer, dasher, carvelanche, hard or soft ice cream, we will satisfy your craving with our fresh, handmade regular or new Carvelite ice cream. Carvel DeWitt. It's what happy tastes like.
Rack 'em up for the perfect sport to play in any weather. Salt City Billiards in North Syracuse, located on Brewerton Road, minutes from Interstate 81, has been the home of a dozen pool tables featuring some of your best shots and memories for years. Cue it up at Salt City Billiards any day of the week. And make sure you're there with me, Dan Satora, for on-call nights every single Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m., where you'll rack them up as many times as you want with 2 hours of pool play for just $5. Also, Bud and Bud Light specials, and we can talk about sports. That's on-call nights Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. at Salt City Billiards, where you can grab a drink, get something to eat, and dive into the pool no matter what the season. Salt City Billiards, minutes from Interstate 81 on Brewerton Road in North Syracuse.
Back here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com. Keeping with football, going back and forth before the break between the NBA and the NFL, talking about tanking games, something that Coach Krzyzewski of the Duke Blue Devils said he was against. Joe Theismann said in an earlier show here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora that he's not a fan of. And I will complete that trifecta and say myself that tanking games would never be an option for me. Let me know for you. What do you think about tanking games? Facebook.com/WakeUpCallDT. That's Facebook.com/, all one word here, WakeUpCall, D as in Dan, T as in Thomas, WakeUpCallDT, and on Twitter, @CallDT. That's C-A-L-L-D-T. DT, let me know your thoughts on tanking games. Positive here for the NFL, they get critiqued about what they do to help players after those players have finished playing football. Floyd Little and I have talked about this before, and his statement that the NFL needs to make sure that it takes care of their players after football, not just during football, but that once these players are done, that for the rest of their life, if anything comes up, if there's any connection to football, any negative that comes from that, what's going on as far as making sure that they can move forward in society and do good things. He's, you know, Floyd Little had stated the fact that he wanted to see the NFL do more to take care of its players. Now, everybody has personal responsibility, and I think that Floyd Little can agree with me on that. I hope that you could agree with me on that, that you can't do everything for someone. But Floyd really honing in on saying when it comes to the attention that these players need healthcare-wise, it's something that's very important, and I absolutely agree that no matter where you work, there needs to be that long term, not just, hey, while you are here, I'm here for you, but once you're gone, I could care less about you. And I'm not saying the NFL did that, but I'm saying that there needs to be a plan in place to help out people after they've given you a service, because the NFL is making money off these athletes every single day. To give a little bit back after these athletes are done really shows character and shows that there's an appreciation for the person and not just the product at the time. And I think that this is a step moving in the right direction. The collective bargaining agreement allowed the NFL to allot $22 million to create an organization under the NFL's Players Association, also known as the NFLPA, that's focused on helping retired NFL players to be eligible to be in this group, to have this organization that's known as, quote-unquote, the trust under the NFLPA. To have the trust help you, you have to be a player that played in the NFL for at least 2 accredited seasons by the league. The organization known as the trust, their duties will be to aid former players with brain and body evaluations, health and nutrition, physical fitness, career transition, and financial education. All of these things that have been brought up in my shows before that are vital and important to securing that a player that competed in professional football in America, in the NFL, will be able to transition successfully into society. None of the aid that I just spoke about, which included taking care of different things like helping former players with brain and body evaluations, physical fitness, financial education, career transition, all of that, none of those things will be charged to the former players. So all of this aid that I talked about under the trust will not come out of the pocket of a former player. Along with that, there will be 4 program managers that'll be helping this group known as the trust under the NFLPA, 2 of which played in the NFL in Hannibal Navies and Zamir Cobb. The program managers will speak with each player individually, assess their needs, and move forward with a plan for each individual player as it's stated. And I hope, you know, if that's something that actually happens, treating everyone as an individual, not a number, that's the reason why I went to Marywood University in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So I think that that's extremely important, to treat people as individuals and not just another face that's going to come into your office. You have to treat people as individuals or your company's never going to be successful, because let's face it, guest service is number one. You don't go back to restaurants that have rude servers, cold food that they don't apologize for. I found a piece of glass in a salad I was eating at a restaurant, and I found it by it being in my mouth and thankfully not cutting anything, and it was a nice little triangle. I waited the entire dinner, gave the manager the opportunity to come out after I told the server what happened. They never came out, so then I nicely asked for the manager and told the manager what happened, and as soon as I said, you should have come out, you should have taken care of this, you know, you should have at least talked with me, not in a rude way, but just saying, you know, you should have been out here, complete demeanor changed, completely rude, inconsiderate. At one point made it sound like I brought the piece of glass in myself and just planted it in my mouth because I'm a crazy person. So, needless to say, that phenomenal guest service has secured the fact that I will never go back. And if anybody ever asks my opinion about the place, I'll tell you my experience. So, guest service is number one. And with this new group under the NFLPA known as, quote-unquote, the Trust, it's important to not only have these program managers' duties laid out, but to make sure that they truly treat each player like an individual. The Trust will also have someone in charge of aiding travel for former players in connection to obtaining health care. The executive director of the Trust, Bahati Van Pelt, said this, quote, "I think it is going to change lives. I know that is a grand statement. I have seen the good and the bad and what happens when players transition out of football. I have seen families and players who have struggled or who have been successful. I know what we have available is what players need." He also went on to say, quote, "We are not going to sit here and wait for the phones to ring. We will find ways to engage," end quote. And there is a thought of social media. There was a connection that potentially the new group known as the Trust will use social media to reach out to former players to let them know that they can have these services. So not just wait and hope that nobody calls and not have to cover these people, but to actually reach out and say, hey, this is what's available to you. Do you want it? Van Pelt made a statement on players after the NFL, which kind of went outside of the Trust into a broader scope of what he's seen. And this is what Van Pelt had to say. Quote, "There is a misconception all players struggle once they leave the game. And I know that personally because of guys like Rob Drummond, who's on with me with Back on the Field all the time here on wakeupcalldt.com, and you can find it on the Back on the Field page, of someone who left the game and continued on and is doing multiple things and improving his, not only improving his life as he moves forward, but doing things to improve other people's lives. So Rob Drummond, a perfect example of someone who spent time in the NFL, who is not only doing positive things in his life, but trying to help others in a positive way. So I will agree with Van Pelt when he said, once again, quote, "There's a misconception all players struggle once they leave the game. We want to make sure we tell the stories of players who transitioned successfully, or those who did have trouble transitioning and then turned that into a successful career," end quote. That all coming from Van Pelt, who is trying to get all this together with the Trust and having these four program directors, two of them being former players, to start helping out these former NFL athletes in a way that I believe can be very beneficial if done correctly and needs to be done. Because having players just leave when they're done playing and saying, "I don't need you anymore, so I'm not helping you out," that doesn't treat people as people. It treats them as just a product. And it would make the NFL very shallow. Kind of like that guy that gets over a girl after a couple months and then just wants to go find someone he thinks is hotter, or he just gets bored, wants to find somebody else that is funnier, whatever it may be. And girls, in the same respect, going out and finding a guy like that, or whatever you're looking for in your life, to go out and say, okay, I want to be with this person. 2 months later, I want to be with this person now. Now I want to be with this person. That would be what the NFL would be doing, is saying, I'm going to like you for a little while, a couple years, and then that's too long, then I'm sick of you, and I want the new product, I want the next thing. Now the NFL is saying, you know what? I'm committed to this relationship, and as you get older, I will be there for you. And that's something that means a lot to me, and I think will mean a lot to former players in the NFL that have had at least two accredited seasons so that they could be helped out in this respect. Like I said, if it's done the right way, I think it'll be very productive. Keeping up here with Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on WakeUpCallDT.com. Getting on to the hard court, we bounced back and forth. We went back to the field. Now, We're back on the court. Preston Truman, ball boy for the Utah Jazz in the 96-97 season, at the age of 18, has decided to auction something away that only he has. The shoes that Michael Jordan wore in Game 5 of the 1997 NBA Finals when the Jazz faced the Chicago Bulls, playing in the game despite flu-like symptoms, had these shoes on, and now Truman is in possession of those shoes that were worn by Michael Jordan. Now, how did he become the receiver of the shoes? In November of 1996, there was a matchup between the Bulls and the Jazz in Utah. Jordan didn't have his pregame applesauce. Truman found out, think about that. Think about this story. This story is based on Michael Jordan not having applesauce and what that affects the result of this story. Applesauce is the key thing here. Truman found out that Jordan didn't have his pregame applesauce and brought him an industrial-sized applesauce before the game against the Jazz. And then Jordan's response to Truman from that were these words, quote, "You came through." His action? Giving Truman an autograph. Later on, Game 5 of the Finals happening that same season, Truman had Jordan inside of the Jazz's home. And once again, he brought Jordan more applesauce. Then Truman, before the start of Game 5, asked if he could have Jordan's shoes once the game concluded. After a 90-88 victory that left Chicago one game away from another title under Jordan, in which they won that title in their following game with Utah in Game 6, the man synonymous with the word basketball scored 38 points. And after that happened, in that two-point victory and almost 40 points from MJ, he gave Truman what he asked for. Not only giving him the shoes, but signing the shoes as well. So why give them away after having the shoes for over 15 years? Truman said this, quote, "I'm 35, and 40's just right around the corner. And it seems like time goes by faster the older you get. Maybe it's just time to get those things out there," end quote. And he'll be getting it out there. The starting bid, $5,000 for Michael Jordan's shoes that he wore in Game 5 of the 1997 NBA Finals, where he had flu-like symptoms. My thing would be, if I had the shoes, is the flu virus, is there a virus still on the shoes? Can I touch these shoes or put these shoes on and get the flu? That's my question. The authenticity question? Don't worry about it. Allegedly, various auction houses have said it's real. They have stated the fact that this is a real product. So it is allegedly the real deal and not just some knockoff or pretend product. And once again, that bid starts $5,000 on Monday, November 18th. So get that money ready, folks. You want some flu-like symptom Michael Jordan shoes for $5,000, most likely it's going to be a lot more than that. Make sure that you are ready for that bid that's happening from Preston Truman, the ball boy that brought Michael Jordan applesauce and came home with Michael Jordan's signed shoes from Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Can't say that happens every single day. Keeping up here with Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on WakeUpCallDT.com. I got to take a quick step aside. Got to take a break here. When I come back, we're doing the schizophrenia one more time, going to football and then back to basketball. The Syracuse Orange coming up next, joining me in exclusive interviews after the break. You don't want to miss out on this. You can't hear it anywhere else. Here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on WakeUpCallDT.com. Come out to Pole Position Raceway, the premier indoor electric karting experience. Open 7 days a week, their quarter-mile-long European-style track
located on the third floor of Destiny USA in Syracuse, New York, is home to the fastest electric carts in North America, with speeds up to 45 miles per hour. Arrive and drive any day, Monday through Sunday. Pole Position Raceway is also available for group events. From kids' birthday parties to corporate events, they will provide an authentic, exhilarating, and safe racing experience your guests will never forget. For more information, visit polepositionraceway.com or stop in today on the third floor of Destiny USA in Syracuse, New York. Pole Position Raceway, built by racers for racers.
Carvel DeWitt, it's what happy tastes like. Do you know why? Because we make ice cream. Creamy, rich, flavorful ice cream. Not yogurt or iced milk like some of our competitors. Ice cream. Fresh, by hand, daily. For the calorie conscious, we have something new for you. Our new Carvelite. Same great flavor, creaminess, and texture of our regular ice cream with only 35 calories an ounce. So whether you want an ice cream cake, flying saucer, dasher, carvelage, hard or soft ice cream, we will satisfy your craving with our fresh, handmade regular or new Carvelite ice cream. Carvel DeWitt. It's what happy tastes like.
Rack 'em up for the perfect sport to play in any weather. Salt City Billiards in North Syracuse, located on Brewerton Road, minutes from Interstate 81, has been the home of a dozen pool tables featuring some of your best shots and memories for years. Cue it up at Salt City Billiards any day of the week. And make sure you're there with me, Dan Totora, for on-call nights every single Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m., where you'll rack them up as many times as you want with 2 hours of pool play for just $5. Also, Bud and Bud Light specials, and we can talk about sports. That's on-call nights Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. at Salt City Billiards, where you can grab a drink, get something to eat, and dive into the pool no matter what the season. Salt City Billiards, minutes from Interstate 81 on Brewerton Road in North Syracuse.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Totora on WakeUpCallDT.com, part of Dan Totora Broadcast Media, where sports meets life every single moment of every day. And here with me right now, and I thank him for coming on to the show, had an opportunity to speak with him first and foremost about the Syracuse Orange practicing in the snow in Syracuse, New York, before going to play Florida State, who obviously is not going to have any snow on the ground. And this is what Tim Douse, the defensive line assistant head coach and special teams coach, had to say about having the guys outside in practice in the snow in Syracuse before Florida State.
It was fun. That's who we are at Syracuse. It was a lot of fun. The kids didn't complain for a second. It got them a little excited to go out there, so they did a good job.
John Raymond not being a part of the mix, you've had some guys step up. Talk about Zeke and what he's done so far.
Well, you know, Zeke and John, they're independent of each other. You know, Zeke's playing on the edge and John was inside. Isaiah has moved, has progressed through the season extremely well. I'm proud of him. He takes coaching extremely well. And I tell you what, the older guys around him have put their arm around him when I'm not so nice to him, and they keep him going. So I'm really proud of him. He's a good kid. He's got a really bright future. You know, and then the inside guys, you know, last week Ryan Sloan got in there. I think it was about 10, 12 plays and did a nice job, made a tackle, made an assist. And then Z Jones, his reps are getting higher and higher and higher. And then, you know, keep riding Bromley as long as I can. I only got a few more games left with him, so I'm going to ride him as long as I can.
You've always been a fan and a rotation. How do you feel it's been fitting after mentioning those guys so far?
Well, I was believing it in the moment, and then it's times like this when guys get hurt that I've already got other guys prepared. They've been out there, and it's not their first time, so it works out extremely well. And I will continue to do that as long as I've got the guys to do it. So I truly, truly believe in it, and the guys have bought into it because they play extremely hard when they are out there.
Jay Bromley, a guy that you said you got a couple more games to get out of him, he's played well when the competition's gotten higher, got after Taj Boyd. So with Jameis Winston, does he play kind of to that? Is he more heightened in your mind when he has to play the bigger talent?
Well, the great thing about Jay, and I've told everyone that'll listen, Jay is steady. That's what I love about Jay. It doesn't matter who the competition is, and that's the greatest compliment I could give Jay. Every single week he comes out there ready to play. It doesn't matter who it was against. And then, you know, he cashed in on some opportunities in that Clemson game, and then obviously I hope he does the same thing here against Florida State, because, you know, when you play these big-time teams, you need your best players to play their best ball. And Jay will prepare to put himself in that position and hopefully cash in on some opportunities.
Tape-wise, what have you been seeing so far from what you've looked at?
Well, I don't sleep much if I watch too much tape of these guys. They're a great football team. I mean, they are balanced, run, pass, across the board. You struggle to find a weak link. They are really, really as good a football team as I've seen. So we got our hands full. The margin for error is small, but our kids are extremely excited. I know our kids will play their tails off, and we'll see what happens.
Special teams-wise, you know, you being involved in that case, what do you see from, you know, as far as punt return right now? I know you had Richie for a while, but you've been working in Brisley. The talent that you have back there, just going through that.
Well, you know, Brisley, we think the ceiling on him is extremely high. But we know what we have with Richie. He's extremely reliable. You know, if the ball is off the punter's foot, Richie's going to catch it. And we don't lose. The ball isn't hitting the ground and rolling like it has in years past. That's what we love about Richie. But as we continue to put Brisley in the right situations, he is that dynamic guy that can make a couple guys miss, maybe a little bit more than Richie. So we have to pick and choose the right situation to get Brisley out there. But we'll ride Richie for quite a while.
Kick return wise, when you have Devontae and George back there, is that really what you're comfortable with right now?
Well, that was our plan going into it. You know, George got a little banged up, and Tyson, you know, he's been in our ear all year. And he's done a good job, so Tyson will still get that opportunity back there. But that unit right there is really got to get off the ground for us and start to help us a little bit more than they have, because we do believe we have the players to execute on that a little bit better. So Coach Smith and myself and Coach Schaefer, we'll get on those guys, and we think we got some things good things going on this week.
Concentration's usually on the return person, but as far as blocking goes, what have you seen from the guys that you've had out there?
Well, we've got the DBs and the linebackers and those semi-skilled players that can run and bend and do things like that. You know, Trevon Burke, Lewis Coker, they got to continue to progress for us and do a good job. Sometimes they go for that kill shot instead of set on their feet and put their face on their blocker, and then they miss. So we got to do a better job of just doing our job out there with those guys. Two of our best are our guys that play a lot of reps for us, Richie Desir and Cam Lynch. So we just got to get them locked into that rep, get off the field, and give the offense a shorter field, because we need to do a lot better in the kickoff return department.
As far as going up against the kick, speed-wise, Florida State's known for having that extra burst of speed. What are you seeing from them, and what do you think you need to really get better at going forward?
Well, they're really good. I mean, they are phenomenal in the kicking game. And their kickoff against our kickoff return will be quite a matchup for them. They can get down the field with great speed. Their kicker really does a great job. He gets the ball all over the field, where a lot of teams just put it in one spot. Florida State spreads it all over the field, so they're very unpredictable that way. So we're going to keep it pretty simple and sound for our guys. That make it a very clear plan for our guys, and we'll rep that tomorrow in practice and see how that goes.
And lastly, Ryan Norton, having him come in and what he's been able to do, what can you say on his play, having to step in?
Oh, thank God. Boy, you were nervous too, huh, on Saturday? I was. He did a great job. Really happy for Ryan coming back off his suspension and knocked two field goals through there. Those are, you know, three big points, you know, to make it a two and then a three, you know, two-score game there. And it was 10 and then it was 13, right? Yeah, he did a great job. And they tried to ice him, and then he got the free practice shot and nailed that one and the other one. So I'm really happy for Ryan. And we put a lot on him. First, he was just the kickoff guy. Now he's our field goal guy, and he's our kickoff guy, and he's done a really, really good job. So hopefully, you know, the sky's the limit, because we got a couple more years left of him.
The Syracuse Orange having adversity to overcome, and it's not going to be any easier. Tim Doust talking on the fact of Ryan Norton having to do so many different things, and then also understanding the fact that of that eligibility, that Jay Bromley, after this season, will be moving forward into a potential NFL career. So with all of that on the horizon, Syracuse has Florida State in the here and now, and going up against a team that's undefeated, fighting to play in the national championship, the last time it'll be this way, with the BCS national championship before the college football playoff, and Florida State being in the top 10 at number 9 in the country in yards per game with 521. Syracuse 82nd in the country with about 385, a little bit more than 385. But in the rushing attack, Syracuse edges out this undefeated Florida State team with about 203 yards rushing per game to Florida State's 196. So Syracuse, that running attack, just very, very strong. The best team in the nation is Army with just under 331 rushing yards a game. But you look at Syracuse ahead of Florida State, because so many people not giving Syracuse an opportunity and not saying many positive things about Syracuse, but Syracuse does have that positive in the fact that their rushing attack has been very, very strong. The other thing working in Syracuse's favor, that a stat line is, it can show you a little bit, but you have to really watch the game to see this, is that Jay Bromley in that Syracuse defensive line plays better. When the talent raises, he continues to perform. I don't think I want to necessarily say that he plays better, and you heard me talk with Tim Doust about this. I want to correct myself and say not that Jay Bromley plays better, but as the talent improves, it's not like he goes down. If he goes up against a Tulane and gets a sack, it's not like when Clemson comes to town that Jay Bromley goes, well, you know, this is Clemson. And it's at the time in the top three in the country. He had two sacks against Taj Boyd. So Bromley's one of those guys that when the talent against him heightens, he continues to show that he is a force to be reckoned with no matter who is going up against him. And he's showing that with the Clemson team. And so I think that looking at Florida State and Jameis Winston, knowing what Jay Bromley's done up to this point, he can and has gotten to the quarterback that he's not supposed to get to, according to some predictions and prognosticators saying that Syracuse doesn't match up well with this team. Yeah, Clemson beat Syracuse heavily, but that defensive line had a positive effect on getting after Taj Boyd, rushing him out of the pocket and sacking him, taking him down. Four sacks, two of them being from Jay Bromley. So I look at the fact that that heightened talent, which Florida State has, doesn't stop a Jay Bromley. That's another thing to look at. Third downs, very important to Scott Schaefer. He's talked about them pretty much every single week when I've had the opportunity to speak with him in the teleconference and also hear what he has to say overall. Florida State in the top 10 once again, and once again number 9 with just under 53% of the time completing their third downs. Syracuse, well below this, they are in the top 100 at number 98, 35.2% of the time they are getting a first down on third down. So that's something that obviously Scott Schaefer has been wanting to improve. Then going into an area where you don't want to be the leader, Syracuse is above Florida State, but not in a good way. Florida State, 59th in the country in penalty yards with 439. Syracuse in the top 15 at number 12 with 619 yards affecting them. 619 yards negating what they were doing on offense in the top portion of the country as far as penalties total as well. They have 74 penalties and looking just at over 600 yards that they've had to give up due to penalties and what that has meant for the team. They were able to defeat Maryland despite having more than 100 yards in just that game alone in penalties against Maryland, which truly just, it helps out the other team. It allows them to get first downs that they weren't going to have. So, and potentially not going to have. We can't say can't because there's those pass interference opportunities where the ball could have been caught if there wasn't that call. But either way, Syracuse giving many gifts in this holiday season to their opponents, something that definitely has to change for the Syracuse Orange, especially when you're going up against a team like Florida State. But despite losing a lot of yards, affecting themselves with those penalties and helping out their opponents, Syracuse is knocking opponents back good enough to be in the top 20 as far as team sacks, which they have 27, leading the Florida State Seminoles by 7 sacks. Florida State has 20 going into their match with Syracuse. So Syracuse being in the top 20 with 27 sacks, very big for the Syracuse Orange, who have had that rotation of defensive linemen that I truly believe is the best part of the three pieces of their defense. Looking at Jay Bromley to Zan Jones, that's getting more time out there, to Micah Robinson, to Robert Welsh. Just a lot of talent. Isaiah Johnson, as a true freshman, that I believe can make an impact, is making an impact more and more in rotation as the season progresses, getting his first career interception and also getting in on a sack in that same game when Syracuse went up against Wake Forest. So a lot of positives for the Syracuse Orange coming on that defensive line, including with sacks. But what doesn't show up on the stat sheet is how many times Syracuse players will hurry the opposing quarterback. And against Wake Forest with Tanner Price constantly moving him out of the pocket, constantly challenging him to do something with the football. And to his credit, he could throw very well on the run, but not to discredit Syracuse that was constantly getting after the quarterback and really not allowing any plays off where the quarterback didn't have to move in some respect to get out of the way of these defensive linemen who have been very, very strong for Tim Doust. And it just speaks volumes to what Tim Doust is doing with the defensive line, which seems to get consistently stronger every single season and get better at their weak moments and weak points as he continues to grow in his coaching career. Keeping with Syracuse, but moving over to the hard court, Syracuse Orange exclusive interviews. I had the opportunity to speak with Syracuse players after their victory over the Fordham Rams, a game that wasn't televised. And if you want to get that information on what went on during the game, you want to get it for free and get a story of what happened, what I saw through my eyes, you can get it right here on wakeupcalldt.com on the Right Now page. You could find that by clicking on the More tab at the top of the homepage, and that will bring you to the Right Now page. You'll see it when you run that mouse over More. You will see that drop-down menu will have Right Now right there for you, and you can get that information for free by becoming a member, which is very, very simple, very easy, and it's free. So make sure you become a member of WakeUpCallDT.com and don't miss out when games aren't televised. And when they are televised, don't miss out on it, because always, from my point of view, what I saw, my take on it, always trying to give you what I saw in a unique way, my story, so to speak, because I know you can get the box score anywhere, but always trying to give you something different, something that comes from me and how I see things, and share those with you. And I thank you all that have been so receptive and so open and so positive of what I have given to you. And I really, truly appreciate everyone that's become a member of the site. You could do it now on the homepage for free, wakeupcalldt.com, right at the top. You click on Member Free, very simple, fast, and easy, and you will be a member and be able to get access to the 24/7 talk forum and the Right Now page to get information, including on recruiting, that you'll find from me as it happens. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Getting back to that Fordham game that Syracuse played against the Rams at home at the Carrier Dome, I had the opportunity to speak with, as I said before, Trevor Cooney, the shooting guard of the team. You'll hear from him, followed by the likes of Michael Benajay, who is there at point guard in the backcourt with Trevor Cooney. And then you'll also hear from Tyler Roberson and BJ Johnson, true freshman forwards on the team. And C.J. Fair will round everybody out, the veteran forward senior back for Syracuse, who had a career night with 26 points, a single game high, a new highest total for C.J. Fair. So good news for him in a game where Syracuse struggled in the second half to get things going, to continue to stay strong, I should say, on defense, allowing 53 points to Fordham after allowing only 21 in the first half. Syracuse pretty even offensively, scored 46 in the first half, 43 in the second half, even though they didn't shoot as well. But the big story was defense, and Jim Boeheim attributed it to the fouls being called, stating the fact that his team stopped playing defense once the fouls started to be called for putting any type of contact on a player. And he said it has to be a learning. He believes the team can learn from the Fordham game. He believes there's something they can take from that. And you can hear what he has to say about that, including the effort of Rakeem Christmas, in my video on youtube.com/wakeupcalldt. That's youtube.com/wakeupcalldt. And make sure you become a subscriber there for free to make sure that whenever the new videos go up, you know about it first on youtube.com/wakeupcalldt. So here they are, one-on-one, exclusive interviews that you've been waiting for. First and foremost, Trevor Cooney, who would have kept the lights on in the dome even if they shut them all off in that first game against Cornell. 27 points, 10 of 12 overall shooting, 7 of 8 from beyond the arc. But in the second game of the season against the Fordham Rams, he does not hit a 3, 0 for 4 for the shots he took from long range. And overall, 1 for 6, Trevor Cooney, 2 points. So I asked him, having these games obviously very different from each other offensively, what he took from the Fordham game. And this is what he had to say.
Take away, I mean, the only thing I could take away is defensively. I picked up some dumb fouls early that really cost me some minutes and cost me to get into the flow and get rhythm in the game. That's the only thing I can really take away from this.
As far as fouls being called a lot on both sides, how do you respond to something like that? Coach Boeheim was talking about how the team kind of played back a little bit after those fouls were called. So what can you do moving forward?
You just got to learn from it. I mean, I know there's new rules put in, and the refs tell you before the game that about the new rules, and just like they're adjusting, we're adjusting too. It's something that's going to take time, but I mean, at the end of the day, you gotta D up and move your feet and keep hands off of defenders.
How do you adjust to something like this and try and get it going sooner than later? And what can you do in practice to kind of get ready for something like this moving forward with all the new rules?
I mean, yeah, it's something that you gotta practice in practice. You just gotta work on it. You just gotta work on defending, especially in the top of the 2-3. I mean, that's crucial for us. You gotta keep people in front. And if not, stuff like what happens in the second half today happened.
With Trevor Cooney right there speaking on the fact that the Syracuse defense is to make sure that they keep guys in front of them so as to not put themselves in an uncomfortable position, I asked Michael Beneger, who is a transfer from Duke in his first season with the Orange as far as being on the court, what his comfort level is with his game a couple games in to the 2013-2014 season.
The comfort level is really good. When I'm out there, I feel like I'm supposed to be out there and ball handling. Everything's feeling more comfortable as the game's going, as practice been going on.
As far as the fouls, a lot of fouls called on each side kind of slows the game down and whatnot. How do you respond to something like that when you're out on the court and there's so much stoppage and pretty much any type of contact, there's calls?
It's tough, but we definitely have to adjust. Offensively, we got to just attack the basket now that everything will be called. And defensively, we got to play defense without our hands.
As far as them making the shots that they were making, is there anything you try to do differently in the second half once they started getting hot from three?
I think a big part of that was we stopped playing and we stopped being aggressive on defense because of the foul calls. And that's just a mindset that we have to keep thinking about. Just keep our foot on the pedal. Previous game, we started out slow, and this one we ended slow. So we can get a game where we're just have our foot on the pedal the whole time. We'll be fine.
How do you go into practice and kind of work on the fact that if there's going to be a lot of calls, what can you do to kind of prepare for that, so to speak, in practice?
Well, luckily that's not my job. So I'll see what Coach has in store for us tomorrow.
And going into coaching with Jerry McNamara, what have you been taking away from him because you've been asked to be that one and be in rotation with Tyler? And going into the season, they talked about you playing three different positions, but you've been there at the top of the key. What's it been like running the point, and what have you taken from Jerry?
I've taken from Jerry a lot of reads, being patient with the ball, being the point. You kind of set the tone, and you don't want people to speed you up. So we worked on slowing down and seeing the floor better. And as far as defense concerned, I'm just ready to play wherever I'm put at.
We talked before about Trevor having a hot night and making your job easy to get the ball to him. When there's a night like tonight where things are a little bit slower from a guy like Trevor Cooney, how do you adjust to something like that?
You just got to keep the faith with him. If he's open, getting the ball, and kind of play inside out. So use the bigs more, get Jeremy Grant going to the basket, and just attacking the rim with all the foul calls. So
Lastly, for me, Jeremy Grant, he gave you the opportunity to, you know, have him back here. He had double digits as far as he was attacking the inside. What was it like having him back?
He's so long and athletic, and he just defensively gives us a stronger backbone, and offensively, he's always looking to offensive rebound and kind of just be that pickup guy that cleans up all our dirty work. So it's definitely good to have him back.
Keeping with comfort level and moving to the forwards, looking at where Jeremy Grant is, and obviously Michael Benajay talking about the fact that he is that backbone for Syracuse and the cleanup guy that is so very important. And Jeremy Grant having a nice return, 6 for 12, 50% from the field, did not take a three. Those were all inside the arc, 4 for 9 from the charity stripe, 7 offensive rebounds, 3 defensive rebounds for a total of 10 to lead the team, along with Daywon Coleman, who also had 7 offensive rebounds and 3 defensive for 10. 16 points overall for Jeremy Grant, 1 block, 3 steals. He did have 2 turnovers, played in 27 minutes. So a good return overall for Mr. Jeremy Grant. And in the front court with him and behind him as a true freshman is Tyler Roberson, who spoke with me on his comfort level so far in the early games he's had to start off his first season with Syracuse.
I feel like I'm getting more and more comfortable every game. I mean, I'm just going out there and playing hard, and everything else will come.
As far as, you know, getting looks, it seems like you guys are doing well, moving around, and you're getting some jumpers. How comfortable are you feeling as far as taking that jump shot?
Good. I mean, I know in the scrimmages I was missing them, but I mean, I'm confident in my jumper. I work on it every day, so I mean, I'll keep taking them, even if I'm off one or two games.
2-3 zone wise, where's your comfort level right now?
I mean, I don't think I'm at where I need to be at, but there's always room to improve in it, and I'm definitely getting better at it every day.
Where are the areas that you want to see yourself improve right now?
One thing I definitely want to do is start rebounding better, because I mean, I think I just need to start attacking the glass more, but I know I'm a way better rebounder than what I've been doing, or how I've been rebounding.
As far as what you're able to take away from some of the veterans that are on here, I'll start with Jeremy Grant. What are you taking from his game so far, and how important was it to have him back?
Good. I mean, he's a hustle guy. Like he'll get a lot of tip-ins, put-backs, and his offensive game is really good, too. And he's active defensively, so, yeah.
As far as having another guy inside like C.J. Fair, he had a career night tonight, but what has he been to you overall, not just in games but also in practice and helping you?
Good. I mean, he's a good player, so you just try to take away some things from him, from him being a leader and on the basketball court.
As far as what you want to see yourself do, when you have the opportunity to work with Adrian Autry, you know, what is he talking with you about? What are the key areas that you're really trying to hone in on?
We work on a lot of shooting, ball handling, just trying to get better at everything, just trying to get better as a player. So just keeping, like, good or bad game, just working on my game and getting in the gym every day.
As far as the jump shot, where are you comfortable shooting as far as range right now?
I can shoot it out to the 3, but I think today I might have been 0-for-2, but they felt good, so I mean, I felt comfortable with it, so I think I can shoot out to the 3.
Tyler Roberson was in fact 0-for-2 from beyond the arc, 1-for-4 overall, had some open looks there with some ball movement, was able to get those short-range jumpers. Another guy able to get some open shots, B.J. Johnson. He struggled as well, 1-for-7 from the field, 0-for-4 from three-point range. Finished the game with 2 points as he continues to get used to the college ranks and the college play and find his place on this team that added 5 true freshmen, with 4 of them playing, B.J. Johnson being one of them. And despite going 1-for-7, I spoke with B.J. Johnson on the fact that even though he struggled and had an open look on the right side and then had another open look on the left side by that corner, by right side of the basket, over by 3-point range, he had 2 open looks. He missed both of those shots, but not just with those shots, overall, he has this fearlessness of taking a shot, even going inside on one of the plays and leaning in and trying to get a shot from a little bit closer. The fact that even if he misses, he has this level of fearlessness that I'm starting to see. And this is what he had to say about being willing to take the shot, even if it isn't falling right away.
I think when I'm playing, I just look for spots where the defense isn't, and I think I just stay confident no matter if I miss a shot. I think the next shot going in, so I just keep that mindset, and when I get open shots, I just take them.
Looking at a game like this where a lot of fouls are called, there's new rules, a lot of the contact was being called, whatever the contact may be, how do you adjust to something like that? I mean, is it strange from what you're used to from high school?
I think we're used to a couple hand checks here and there on defense, which benefited us a lot. But I think now you can't really put hands on the offensive player. So I think it takes away from us defensively. But I think it's not really nothing too crazy. It's just a little adjustment.
Do you think it affects something specifically like the zone with something like this? Because you have guys that can shift and get in front of players, do you think there's a benefit to having the zone?
I think the zone benefits us just for that reason, but I think other teams that play man-to-man all game, that might take away from them a little bit, so that might be in our favor.
As far as your play, where do you want to see yourself improve the most right now? I mean, like we talked about, you're aggressive, you're out there taking shots. What do you want to do more of or get better at?
Right now, I just want to hit a couple shots, get a little momentum going. But other than that, I think maybe I could help rebound a little bit more, run the floor a little bit more. But besides that, that's pretty much it.
As far as what you've been able to take away from some of the other guys, from C.J. Fair's game and what he said to you maybe in practice, what do you take from somebody like him and what he's been doing as a veteran on this team?
I go against him every day in practice, so just tell me keep going, keep being aggressive, and some of the things he tried to do against me in practice, I probably take it myself and try to do it.
What about someone like Jeremy Grant? What has he kind of taught you and having him back in the mix? I mean, you haven't been practice all the time, but you get to see him out in the game today. What have you taken from him?
He's a great energy guy. So I think the exhibition game, I wasn't ready coming off the bench. I wasn't like really into the game. But he's a great player at coming off from the bench and giving us a spark, though. He just taught me you never know when you're going to get in, so just always be ready. Be, like, engaged in the game. And I think that's the biggest thing I take away.
Keeping with the front court, C.J. Fair, veteran, senior forward for the Syracuse Orange. 26 points once again, the best single game high he has ever had in his collegiate career. 6 of 11 in the first half, which matched his field goals made to field goals attempted of the entire game against Cornell. That all happening in the first 20 minutes. As I said, finishing with 26, had 6 rebounds all on the defensive side, 7 of 7 from the charity stripe, had 2 steals. But the only negative, the only kind of black mark, so to speak, on that stat line for C.J. Fair is the fact that for the second game in a row to start off the season, he led the Syracuse Orange in turnovers. Had 7 turnovers against Cornell, had 4 against Fordham. Everything else looking strong for C.J. Fair as far as his totals and what he was able to do, a little bit better than 50%. From the field, despite the fact that he only hit 1-3 out of the 4 tries that he took. But out of all the Syracuse players, only 2 people hit a 3, that being C.J. Fair and Michael Benajay. The team was 2-for-16. Michael Benajay and C.J. Fair put together were 2-for-5. So not too bad right there, a lot better than how the team looked overall. And I had an opportunity to speak with C.J. Fair about getting started early, what he felt attributed to the fact that shots were falling earlier for him and he had that 6-for-11 going into halftime.
You know, just my first few shots was good for me, so that kind of gave me a little, you know, rhythm and confidence, you know, keep being aggressive. And coaches kept running plays for me, you know, try to get me open and get a good look. So I guess to say the ball just bounced my way, so it kind of felt good.
I kept seeing it in the rotation. You guys were moving the ball a lot on offense, more often than not, which was getting you some open looks. What can you say about the ball movement right now with the team and how the offense is going?
The ball movement was good. We got a lot of everybody on our team looks for one another, and I try to make a good play. And that's the thing. Nobody's really trying to out there for themselves. So when everybody's buying into the team, it makes everyone look good.
Jeremy Grant coming back. What does it mean to you to have him out there?
It helps me out personally a lot, because he's one of them players that can knock down the open shot, and he's a good offensive rebounder. So he brings the energy we need to the team.
A lot of fouls getting called on both sides. You guys have to adjust to new rules. How do you move forward and be prepared for something like this where there's so much stoppage?
It's something like you gotta adjust, knowing what to expect and how the referee's gonna call the game. So you just gotta adjust to them. They're not gonna adjust to us. We gotta adjust to them.
And lastly, for me, B.J. Johnson, Tyler Roberson miss some shots today, but they're getting some open looks and getting involved. What can you say about their play, and what are you trying to do to kind of help them move forward and shake things off when they miss?
They did miss some shots they normally make, but I like those being aggressive. They wasn't being timid, and they was getting open shots. They just weren't knocking it down, but I know going forward they start knocking those down.
CJ Fair talking highly of who you heard from just a little while before here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com. That being true freshman forwards Tyler Roberson and BJ Johnson. CJ Fair with that positive encouragement for the guys that are just getting that first feel of being on the Syracuse Orange team. For those of you on my team following me on Twitter at CallDT, that's at CALLDT, you know about Tweet of the Week. I pick my favorite tweet every single week, the one that maybe it's witty, maybe it has that special message to it, maybe it's something that somebody said that I didn't expect, or a picture that was funny, whatever it may be. The Tweet of the Week is your way to be original, to be classic, to be different, to stand out. Just by sending a simple message, and that message could end up being the Tweet of the Week. Make sure you follow me at CallDT, that's CALLDT, all the time on Twitter, so you have the opportunity to be the Tweet of the Week. And typically, I like to pick someone that is following me, but this week, I couldn't pass this up. I will be choosing someone that I'm following on Twitter as the Tweet of the Week. But to find out who that is, you have to hear this first. He rocks in the treetop all day long. Hopping around and they'll sing his song. All through the barrels on Jaybird Street. Round and round and go tweet, tweet, tweet. This week's Tweet of the Week goes to a man of very few words. Someone who doesn't say too much when the mic is put in front of him, but is always willing to talk on Twitter. That is Brizzly Esteem, who you can follow by following at @ball_chill1. That's at @ball_chill1, and the number one, who said this: life is too short for all the unnecessary things. So true. A man of few words, but yet, when he says something, it's profound. Life is too short for all the unnecessary things. Thank you, Brizzly, for that reminder. Let it be a reminder to us all. And to remind you, become a member on WakeUpCallDT.com as soon as possible, as soon as this is done. Right here at the end of Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora at WakeUpCallDT.com, you should be going to the homepage of WakeUpCallDT.com and clicking on Becoming a Member Free. And just by doing that, you will get access to all of the information that I have to give to you for free. You don't have to pay for anything. I'm getting the information. You just have to show up and become a member. Simple, couple clicks, and you're there. That's all you have to do. For free on WakeUpCallDT.com. Don't miss out on everything that's being offered to you there. Also, check me out on YouTube.com/WakeUpCallDT to get almost 300. We'll be over 300 soon enough. But looking at upwards of that 300 when it comes to videos that you can watch on WakeUpCallDT.com's channel. You can look all over YouTube, but just on the WakeUpCallDT.com channel, you'll get right around 300 videos, and they continue to produce more and more and more. As I go to all these different games and different events, you can expect to have more videos up there. Always something new happening on YouTube.com/WakeUpCallDT and on Facebook.com/WakeUpCallDT. And you know Twitter from Tweet of the Week, @CallDT, CallDT. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you to all of my loved ones and to all of you, whether I know you or not, whether I've spoken to you, met you or not. Thank you for helping make my dream a reality every single day. I hope that I made you smile, and I hope that I gave you something positive to take forward. God bless. I hope to talk to you very soon. Be well, and stay right here to WakeUpCallDT.com, the one-stop sports shop where sports meets life.